Welcome to the Sports Info Solutions Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, joined by our producer, Justin Stein. As usual, we are back for the 2022 NFL season, and we've got an awesome guest for you today, Josh Larkey from the 33rd Team. In case you don't know, SIS and the 33rd Team have come together. We are combining our powers to give you the best content that's ever been seen in the football universe before, and there's lots of things coming out from data to articles to different tools that have come out on the 33rd Team website. And that's exactly where we want to start. If you haven't checked it out yet, you've got to check out the 33rdteam.com/the-edge. It is the most powerful fantasy tool that's ever been invented. It is Josh Larkey's vision combined with SIS data and brought to the masses through the 33rd Team. The whole team at the 33rd Team, they've got everybody from Bill Parcells all the way throughout, every football name that you could imagine involved in what they're doing over there. And SIS is their analytics department. So we have put together just this very first piece. There's going to be lots more coming out on the SIS and 33rd Team front, some of it fantasy related, like this sort of stuff, but also a lot of it just hardcore football related. And Josh Larkey's somebody who really has a good feel for both sides of that. So we're very excited to bring you the following interview with Josh Larkey from the 33rd Team. Josh, welcome to the show. So excited to have you. So excited to be back after the summer with the season coming. And especially because here we are, it is Friday, September 2nd. And on September 1st, we rolled out the Edge, the 33rd Team's new tool. And I know I couldn't be more excited. Welcome to the show. And yeah, how are you, man?
Matt, it's good to be here. I feel like we've had like a lot of 10-minute conversations, but we have yet to have the full hour-long conversation. So it's happening now, two and a half months in. So it feels good to be here. And to address what you just said yesterday, and I can't overstate this, I think what we dropped was truly an industry-shifting tool where it was really only possible because of our partnership, the 33rd Team and Sports Info Solutions. And the way that I like to describe it, because I think a lot of people out there, the tools that they currently use might check one, maybe two of these boxes, but I really wanted to create a tool that checked all these boxes where both beginners and experts can use it. Usually when you're using a tool, it's like, oh, this is very, very basic. Or you look at it and it looks like some honors math calculator assignment and you go, it looks like something I'm never going to want to touch. And then we also wanted to make sure that it's easy to use in terms of the training purposes, and that not just it doesn't look intimidating, but that within 1 minute, you can actually start deriving your own insights. And then the third key pillar for this type of tool was ultimately, we want you to be using this tool, as in this tool only. So much research in this industry, football, fantasy betting, whatever it might be, we all know the drill. You've got 10 tabs open on the left screen. You got 10 tabs open on the right screen. You are furiously looking back and forth at different data sources, trying to piece it all together. And I think that what we have is kind of a comprehensive experience where you can just click the tabs within the tool and stay just on the tool. So that was kind of the three big pillars that I wanted to be able to hit. And that I think the Sports Info Solutions developers just knocked out of the park.
Man, I can't tell if you're excited about it. I wish it was a little bit clearer based on your intonality. You know, it's an audio medium. No, but seriously, this is first of all, I want to remind everybody, the 33rdteam.com. This is at the 33rdteam.com/the-edge. You can find it any way you want to. If you check out any of the 33rd Team, whether it's from TikTok to Twitter to the website itself. We are going to say this is at best, it's best as a desktop experience right now. So if you're listening right now and you've got it pulled up on the train or something like that, also bookmark it. So when you get home, you remember to check it out and get the full experience. We are working on continually updating and making the tool get better over time, but that mobile aspect is going to come just, you know, as we go now. First and foremost, there's so much information. It's just hard to fit on a cell phone there.
You use it on the cell phone and you're like, oh, this is the best tool I've seen. And then you use it on the computer and it's just an absolute game changer. And I think for everyone out there, if you're trying to do advanced research on your phone, you're better than that. Open up the laptop.
For real, man. And this is just the tip of the iceberg with what the SIS and 33rd Team partnership is going to bring as we work together and as we get going. It was funny because yesterday morning, as it was getting rolled out, somebody asked, you know, hey, how's it being received so far? Bryce Rossler, one of our researchers, he said, well, I woke up with a bunch of Twitter messages from people saying, hey, do you know that you made all of this data available for free? And we're like, yeah, that's the point. That's the point of what we're trying to do here. It's the combination of all the data that we have, just elevating the conversation, elevating whether it's your fantasy league and you're having a conversation about which player you're going to start this week, or whether it's the Joe Banners and the Mike Tannenbaums of the world, trying to make all the sort of insight that they've used throughout their careers more available to the public. That's the whole point of the 33rd team and SIS. I can speak for our side. We couldn't be more excited to be a part of it.
It was funny. So you mentioned Bryce. Bryce and I were actually co-workers for about a 6-week period earlier in the summer. He and I actually talked recently about how it's very cool that we are now back and kind of indirectly working together. He's a super sharp guy. I've learned a lot from him about football.
I had no idea. When Bryce went on his sabbatical, he was working with you. That's so funny.
Yes, we had a very, very brief overlap. Right as we started talking about some big things, we both kind of left that company. And I think it's really funny now, because what we're doing is ultimately just so much better than anything that I'd done in the past work-wise, in terms of being able to take the types of thoughts that are in my head and the way that I would love to work with the data, and feeling like we have actual resources out there to make those kind of thoughts an actual reality. Because so many times people like myself will be like, oh, it would be really cool if I could have this tool, or I would love to be able to filter the data this way. And for years, I've thought about how can I take the insights I derive through my coding and analytics background and kind of apply it to the masses, where the Joe Fantasy out there does not need to have an advanced analytics degree like I have to be able to derive the same insights that I am. And I feel like we are just scratching the surface of what that can be like with the edge.
I know people have seen you over the years, but more recently, since you joined the 33rd team, you're sort of blowing up on the internet. With that, I want to give you an opportunity, give the listeners an opportunity to hear, what was your past? What was it like leading you to this point? Kind of, you know, the 2-minute version. Who is Josh Larkey, and how did you get to where you are today?
So it's kind of a very unconventional path. I've sort of done a little bit of everything. And I think that it's ultimately made me really well-rounded and sort of helped me get to where I am today, because there were very few things at this point that I haven't at least tried. So I went to school, I studied economics in college. I'm double minored in math and psychology. So that already can give people a little bit of insight into how I think just people in general are interesting, hence the psychology minor, which seems like it has no business being paired with economics and math. Unfortunately, I did not have the technical skills that I needed to actually make it in the sports analytics world right out of college. I applied for so many jobs. The only job I could get was Yelp gave me an account executive role. And they said, would you like to make 75 cold calls a day for $35,000? And I said, you know what? I should probably go to grad school. So that was literally the only job I could get out of college, which is crazy thinking about it now. Everyone was like, nope, not qualified. Oh, you can't code. Oh, you can't do this. Sorry. So I went to UT Austin for grad school. I got my master's in business analytics. And while I was there, I was basically told, you know what? You're not a very good coder, because the secret's out. I'm not a very good coder. Almost failed a few classes. And the whole time I was there, it was just me getting rejected from sports jobs. And the only position that I could land in grad school was a baseball analytics internship with the Detroit Tigers. I packed up my life and I moved out there for the 2018 baseball season. And about 2.5 months into my time there, before I had even started to tackle my big project, which ended up being, I think, pretty interesting, optimizing how outfielders should stand based on the batter pitcher matchup in the stadium. But anyway, 2.5 months in there, they said, sorry, you will not be able to get a full-time role. We already have the department set up. Thanks for playing. You can stay with us up to 1 year, and then you're going to have to find another job. So ultimately, I had picked my life up. I had moved to a place where I got an internship, and they still didn't want me. I moved back home to San Diego, where I grew up, and was able to get a business analytics position with the Padres. So still in baseball, no longer on the baseball side, on the business side. And it was actually kind of funny, because I liked that job a little bit more. Even though I was working with data that was not as interesting, it was no longer baseball data, it was ticket sales data, I actually had a lot more responsibility there. I was basically consulting within the company. I'd meet with the VP of marketing 1 week or the VP of sales the next week, figure out what their data needs were and find creative solutions to help them out. And I realized that I enjoyed that interactive process and that me sitting in a dark room coding was not necessarily the best use of my time, even if it was the data I thought I wanted to view. And unfortunately, about 14 months into what I thought was that dream job, I still actually cannot believe this. I do believe I am the first person in history to be fired for having 100% accuracy with projections. I let them know early in 2020 that we would have quote unquote zero fans in the stands because of COVID, which ended up being right. We had zero fans. And for that 100% accuracy, I was then COVID furloughed and COVID fired. Because if there were no ticket sales, all of my projects started to trickle away. And that's kind of when that summer 2020 was ultimately my transition to the fantasy industry, where I had been doing work on the weekends for Player Profiler, just a lot of random coding assignments, maybe 5 to 10 hours a week. And that summer is essentially when I started to lobby Matt Kelly, who founded Player Profiler. Matt, you need to just give me more work. I can handle it. I literally have nothing else going on right now. I am unemployed. And that was basically the transition. He said, okay, why don't you lead all of our DFS efforts this season? To which I said, yes. He did not fully know at the time I had not played DFS before. I had maybe put $20 into DFS in my life.
Nice.
And basically took 1 month before the start of the 2020 season to learn how to play DFS. All I did all day was listen to podcasts and do research. I was just an absolute maniac. And we ended up having a really, really profitable DFS season for our subscribers. We were able to win them a lot of money. And that was essentially my intro to the industry, was just lobbying to do something, taking on a new task that I had no experience with, and trying to figure out how I could get some type of base proficiency. And I feel like my kind of unique educational and professional background helped set me up for that, where I had done so many different things over the last few years that all I wanted was a new challenge and to be able to just attack it and see what happened. So
you're like a professional athlete that as a kid was playing all the different sports and not specializing in anything. And then, you know, like in college, discovered a whole new sport that's actually the one that you went pro in. It's interesting because we're talking about fantasy today. We're here to talk about the edge and all that stuff. But in terms of the sports career, you said you have an unconventional path. And I think the unconventional path is much more common than the quote unquote conventional path, the sort of linear path where you start with a team right out of college and then you stay with that team for years and years and work your way up the ladder. Your bosses are going to get fired. Your bosses' bosses are going to get fired. You're going to have something like COVID happen where you have 100% accuracy and 0% work to show for it. So I just think it's fascinating to hear. There was so much about your story that felt similar to my story in ways when you talk about, yeah, there's the on-field people, and then there's I'm sitting in a dark room coding people. But really something special happens when you can start to connect both sides of that chain and really start to bring everybody together. So I think that's fascinating. So let's fast forward to this year. How did things happen with the 33rd team? How did you get hooked up with those guys?
So as I've been working in this industry, one thing I realized was I'd never had this much fun working. And I think it's because I'm not a very good coder, but I like being able to code and just kind of saying like, hey, I've got a master's degree. That way people think I'm smart and know how to code. And that it's kind of a like gets you in the door ultimately to have that type of technical skill. But really, I think I've learned that my skill set and what I like best is kind of combining that technical side with being able to be a good communicator. And that's not necessarily as important in many other industries, but in the fantasy industry where you're trying to help the general public get better, that type of skill set's so important. And
Strong disagree. That's important in every industry, communication, every industry. I'm going to say strong. Like you'd be okay if there was no football tomorrow. You'd have a job because you'd figure out what that other thing was that you could communicate really well to people that don't have the tools to gather that insight for themselves.
Matt, that's very flattering. So now to talk about the 33rd team and how I was able to join them. So it all just started with a very simple Twitter DM from the 33rd team Twitter account. I actually remember it was about, at this point, it's probably just over a year ago. I was followed on Twitter by Joe Banner and Mike Tannenbaum. And I was at my parents' place for dinner that night when it happened. And I showed them and I said, I have no idea what's going on. But this is one of the cooler Twitter moments of my life, to have these two just industry pros who have basically been at the very, very top of NFL orgs. This is super cool. Didn't really think anything of it.
Just in case people don't know, Mike Tannenbaum was the GM of both the Jets and the Dolphins. The Mark Sanchez, Rex Ryan Super Bowl runs that they had, or AFC Championship runs that they had. That was him. And Joe Banner, for years, built up the Eagles organization as their president, made them the first organization that embraced analytics. And he was also my boss when I was with the Browns for a year before that all came to an end too quickly. But yeah, that's who we're talking about here.
So I didn't think too much of it after that point. I had kind of the holy crap moment. This is very, very cool. Fast forward a year, and apparently they had been sort of watching everything that I'd been doing in the industry from afar, and had decided that they wanted the 33rd team to no longer be just kind of an NFL football think tank, but they wanted to actually expand into the fantasy and betting industry. And they were looking for someone who had a very data-driven skill set that could help take them into that industry, where, to quote Joe, who I think says it well, he says, you know what, at the end of the day, you need to win and you have to have a high batting average in this industry. And I couldn't agree more. No matter how engaging you are, if you're just giving people betting picks or fantasy sleepers that never pan out, and everyone who follows your advice is just hemorrhaging money, no matter how fun they're never going to pay you for your advice. And that was one thing that just always stuck with me when I was talking with Joe ultimately. But to rewind slightly, I get a Twitter DM from the 33rd team account. They say, hey, would you like to hop on a call and learn more about the 33rd team? And I said, yes. And pretty much right from the start, I loved the vision of harmonizing football and fantasy and betting, where so many sites out there try to focus on one or the other. And even the sites that do have content for both, they generally don't merge them together very well. And it's very siloed. It's like, oh, this is our football content. This is our fantasy content. These people should never talk. They should never have anything to do with each other. And I ultimately was able, through the interview process, to sell Mike and Joe on this idea of how we could bring those two worlds together. And that I always give this example, and it's funny because I'm actually hardcore fading Hunter Renfrow in fantasy football this year, but that's a story for another time. The example I like to give is, let's say that we have a former Pro Bowl cornerback that's breaking down the film, and he goes, you know what? This week, whoever the slot receiver is that faces this team is going to absolutely feast, because check out this coverage scheme and that coverage scheme, and notice what the linebackers are doing, what the safeties are doing. The slot wide receiver is always open. So already we have that authority on film showing you that based on this coverage scheme, the slot receiver is open. And then it might pass off to someone like myself, and I'll say, hey, Hunter Renfrow is going to feast against this defense this week. His player prop bet is 52.5 receiving yards based on stats X, Y, and Z. This is why I think he's going to go over. If you don't like it from me, we've got the film authority, who was a Pro Bowl cornerback, saying it as well, and bringing together the film and analytics. How are you not going to want to take that bet? And chances are, those types of bets, when both the film side and the analytics side are so in favor of it, those are going to be the bets that hit at a very, very high rate. And that is kind of the long-term vision for the 33rd team with football, is that if we can bring together those two worlds, that we're going to be incredibly accurate. It's going to be incredibly engaging, and it's going to be an experience that no one has really seen before.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of sort of the classic dilemma, one of the things that I think really separates NFL teams right now that'll, you know, into the next decade or so, is how well do we integrate our analytics with our scouting, whatever we want to call these different sort of micro teams within our team. How do we bring those together so that they all enhance one another, instead of siloing them so that when the scouts disagree with the analysts, we just throw our hands up in the air and you know, everybody has a power struggle to see who can actually win. I love the approach of the 33rd team, and you kind of extending it one step further when you talk about the fantasy betting aspect of, hey, if we're right, we make more money. So let's try to figure out how to be right together, instead of being worried about whether, you know, where the film, the quote unquote, the film disagrees with the analytics, which is a weird thing to say to begin with, because everything is subject to analysis. Why, instead of having an argument and telling Darrell Revis that he's an idiot, why don't we actually come together and start to figure out what one side is seeing that the other side isn't seeing? Maybe there's something that the data is not picking up on, because the data is ones and zeros, and it's not as analog, and it can't pick up all the artistry that maybe that former Pro Bowl corner can. But maybe also at the same time, maybe there's a blind spot that the corner has. There's something about the scheme that he played in that's changed about the way teams are playing right now that the data can help illuminate. So it's great when things match up. That's, you know, then we're, let's go, let's bet all our money. If when it doesn't match, I think there's a lot of really interesting to be learned. And the key is to not be afraid of when there's a disagreement between the data and the scouting, the art and the science. The key is to really engage with that and learn from it.
Yeah, I think that when you're in agreement, film and analytics, then yes, this is a player that we should draft in fantasy, or this is a bet that we should make. And when there's the disagree, yes, maybe you're not saying like, oh, because we disagree, oh no, I'm still putting my money here, like not gonna take any losses. But more so thinking about that as, okay, well, this is actually a nice learning opportunity, and we're lucky enough to be able to have this learning opportunity because of, thanks to All Pro cornerback X saying this and me seeing that the data disagrees with it, this is something new for me to actually dive into and figure out, is he right? Is there a blind spot in the data process? Is there a new type of metric we should be capturing? Am I just looking at these data points in the wrong light? And I think that that's, like you said, that's really important too. And that the disagreements don't necessarily mean that the process is wrong and we have to start over, but more so that that's just a learning opportunity. And I think one other thing, just to put out there on the table, some people out there that be like, Josh, you're an analytics guy, you must hate the film community, right? And what I think they don't even realize is a lot of the stats I use are film stats. One thing that Sports Info Solutions has is a lot of game charting data, where there are people who are professional football watchers, paid to watch the games and make notes of different data points. And that if you're noting that there was a missed tackle by the running back, that is actually a film stat. So if I'm saying that this running back is very elusive because of this stat, that's actually just straight up on film. He was making the guys, they did not tackle him. He was elusive. And I think that many people don't realize that a lot of the quote unquote stats I use are actually purely from the game charters. And I think that's one thing that I love about the position I'm in right now, is just that SIS is actually charting what all 22 players do on every single snap, and the wealth of data out there, and what the types of insights that we'll be able to create over time from that. I think it's just going to be an unparalleled look at what is actually going on each play.
Yeah. I mean, at least five scouts looking at each game before it even gets to the auditing and quality control. And it's all based on stuff from my time with the Saints, my time with the Browns, other people in the organization that have spent time with teams and in clinics and everywhere across the board, their own playing experience. And that's why we're gathering these data points that we are collecting. And we try to gather them as objectively as possible so that they're useful to you. So I beg any quote unquote film guy, whatever the hell that means at this point, because I don't know what that makes me. I was a scout on the road grinding film thousands of hours per year. And I've also been diving into the SQL database and all that kind of stuff. So I don't, you know, if those two teams are supposed to hate each other, I'm going to have some real like existential dilemmas coming at me. But go to the edge and start to look at how quarterbacks perform against different coverage schemes. Go look and see what type of routes the receivers that you're interested in looking at to start this weekend are running, and how that route tree might play against the different defenses that they're doing. This is exactly what you're saying. This is film. This is football. I want to quote you right here. A great quote, just as I invited you to come on the pod and we said, you know, what do you want to talk about? You said, one of the next frontiers of fantasy betting success is better understanding football itself, and SIS data will help us accomplish that. I think that sums up everything that you're saying there. And I can't wait to help bring more and more people from the public into that conversation, because what we can all do together is much more than what I can do or what you can do and just that. All right, let's talk more about how you've leveraged the SIS data so far. One article that you put together that was really cool, that I don't know how you would have gotten together any other way, player archetypes. Tell us what went into that article. What was the high level there, and where can the people find it?
So you can find my player archetypes to target and fade article on the 33rdteam.com. If you just type in player archetypes 33rd team into Google, it should come up pretty much immediately. And that, I would say that's kind of like my flagship research article at this point. And it's really the basis for how I evaluate and make so many of my fantasy decisions. So I'll give people kind of an example of one of these player archetypes that I target. And I guess the inverse would be that the players that don't match this are ones that I want to fade. So one of the player archetypes to target is running backs that are used in the red zone and have a pass catching role. And that might be like, oh, Josh, what does that mean? Who fits that bill? Why is that a thing? Well, if you actually look at play-by-play data and look at the tens of thousands of carries that happen each year, it's actually kind of unfortunate that carries just, they don't score fantasy points. If you're getting carries not in the red zone, those things are worth less than half a fantasy point per carry. And some people might be like, oh, that seems like a lot. Well, I'll put it another way. If your fantasy running back is getting 20 carries between the 20s, that is under 10 fantasy points. So that huge number of 20 carries actually really just means nothing. It does not mean that this is a startable fantasy player. They would also need to catch the ball. They would need to get red zone work. And the other thing is the running back targets are so valuable. Even if you're playing in a standard league where you get no points for a reception, a running back target is still more valuable than a carry. And the second that you start hitting half PPR, PPR formats, they become multiple times better to have a target than a carry, where it often ends up being that every 2 to 3 carries is the same as just getting one running back target. And that getting a red zone or a goal line carry is like 3, 4, 5, 6 between the 20s carries. And that really got me thinking of, okay, we know running back is a brutal position in the NFL. These players are constantly getting injured. I ultimately want to draft running backs who are scoring fantasy points efficiently. And I don't want to draft the running back who's getting run up the middle 20 times per game, frequently between the 20s. And that's helped me realize that a running back like a DeAndre Swift, this is the fantasy goldmine, because he's ultimately looking like the next Alvin Kamara in fantasy. Because Alvin Kamara, part of why he's had such career longevity is because he is not being run up the middle 20 times per game. He's being used creatively in the passing game. And even though Kamara has generally not been this 300 carries per season running back, he has been able to pretty easily and comfortably outscore so many of those types of running backs, like the Derrick Henrys, like the Nick Chubbs, because of his pass game work and being able to break it down to the play level and looking at the field position. The very specific event, was it a running back carry? Was it a running back target? Has helped me realize that ultimately, if you can find running backs that you are very confident will be used in the red zone and you're very confident will be used on third down, that is the fantasy cheat code. And that's why someone like a DeAndre Swift is going to be so valuable in fantasy. Why someone like Leonard Fournette was so valuable last year, because Leonard Fournette was on a really good offense, getting a ton of red zone and goal line work, and also had Tom Brady checking the ball down to him and led the NFL in targets per game. This is what a league-winning running back looks like. This is why Leonard Fournette, even though you grabbed him late in fantasy last year, was one of, if not the most heartbreaking players to lose at the end of the season, because he was giving you 20 fantasy points per game down the stretch.
Yeah, he's down in Tampa Bay, reminded me of the old Mike Allstott touchdown vulture, just getting those 1 yard touchdown runs and snatching up the fantasy points. It's such a good point you make about just when you really think about the math of fantasy football, what's valuable and what isn't. I'm always talking about how I stopped playing fantasy football a long, long time ago, a lot because I tend to be very focused on football and how it plays on the field. And for that reason, I didn't want to be trying to think about who's going to be the best fantasy player, because it's really a different question than a football guy would use to roster build. That said, to your point earlier, you can use the same kind of information to educate both sides of it. And in a weird way, what's valuable in fantasy, the receiving running back, has now come back around and shown that it's kind of more valuable in real football. It used to be that the most important trait a running back had was his ability to carry the football. Now it's his third most important trait after catching the ball and pass protection in terms of being able to play. And I want to ask you about a sort of interesting player, I would assume, in fantasy circles. I'm still not up on my fantasy that much, but I would imagine Clyde Edwards-Helaire, not quite the talent of a DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift probably, you know, we had him as a blue chip level player coming out of college and think he can be all that. CH, we had a good grade on him. Not as much the pass blocking ability. We saw him not get as much of a third down role. So even though he has the receiving ability, I don't know if he was getting the snaps in the situations where he was seeing the targets. What do you make of him at this point in his career, some injuries that he's dealt with, and that kind of funky Kansas City offense? Where are you at on him as a fantasy play?
So with CH, it's really interesting because the community has really soured on him. If you look at his average draft position, you can get him in like the eighth round now, which seems kind of crazy for a quote-unquote starting running back in a Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid-led offense. With Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he had a really promising rookie year. The target share was around 10%, and it's like, oh my goodness, we're getting a guy who's going to get some goal line carries, is going to get some targets in a fast-paced, hyper-efficient offense. And then what happened last year? Everything fell out. He no longer got the targets. He was often getting subbed out at the goal line for Darrell Williams, the undrafted running back of all people. And at that point last year, I was out. I thought, all right, I'm never drafting Clyde Edwards-Helaire again. This is not a good NFL running back. And then new attention got brought to me that he had gallbladder surgery last summer, and he showed up at training camp at 160 pounds. I weigh 160 pounds. If someone told me that I had 2 months to get up to a quote-unquote NFL weight for the season, I couldn't do it. And I think it puts it in perspective. I'm a tiny guy.
And he probably plays in the low 200s usually, even though he's what, 5'9" probably. He plays in the low 200s, I'd assume.
I would assume he's playing 205 to 210. So for him to have to put on 40 to 50 pounds over a couple month period, recovering from that surgery, it makes sense why he was not himself last year. So I'm actually back in this year because of what his rookie season and usage looked like and the rest of the depth chart, where we have seventh round rookie Isaiah Pacheco. Generally, draft capital is a pretty strong indicator of what the league thinks about these players. We have Jerick McKinnon, who's 30 years old. He's had numerous injuries, knee surgeries. And while I think per game, he might be a strong contributor on third downs, I think he is just about as much of a health risk as you could possibly get. And then we have Ronald Jones. And Ronald Jones, I think he's actually the quintessential player that I would not target in fantasy football, because Ronald Jones has a unique ability to not get either of the valuable touches. He does not get the red zone work because he has a fumbling problem. And Ronald Jones does not get the targets because he has a catching the football problem. So all this is to say that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he has that first round draft capital. He had the promising rookie season, and there's just really a wasteland on the rest of the KC depth chart, but we know it's going to be an efficient high scoring offense. So I think right now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is just one of the best buys in all of fantasy.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I didn't want to lead you there, but because I do like me some CEH, but whatever. Running backs don't matter anyway. What are we even talking about? Any other articles before we really dive into some fantasy sleepers and give the listeners what they want? Any other articles from the 33rd team that are worth mentioning that people just need to check out?
Yeah, I'll highlight one more from one of our newer contributors, Ben Wolbransky. He's a data scientist by day, and he's a fantasy player and better by night. And he wrote this incredible article titled, "Are Vegas Totals Trustworthy?" He looked at about 20 years of data, trying to figure out based on the Vegas game totals or Vegas win totals at the start of the season. So like maybe a team's projected for 10.5 wins, and that you then have to bet either, I think they're going to have more than 10.5 or fewer than 10.5 wins by the end of the season. He looked at all those lines over about 20 years. And what he found through Monte Carlo simulations, which if you're not familiar, just think about simulating an event over and over and over again. So he simulated all these different combinations of bets over and over and ultimately found that if you just take the teams that are projected to have a lot of wins and make the playoffs and just systematically took the unders on those Vegas win totals at the start of the season, you would actually be quite a profitable bettor. And I think that's just a fascinating piece. And I love stuff like that where it's incredibly actionable, and that what you could do is if you see a team projected for a lot of wins, you could just bet that under. I love the Bills. They're going to be an incredible team this year, but there's also so many paths to them just, I don't know, winning 10 or 11 games and missing their win total. What if Josh Allen gets hurt for 3 games? What if a couple key players on defense get hurt? What if there's just some bad variance like last year when they lost to Jacksonville of all teams? And I just thought that was fascinating and was just such an incredible data-driven article with clear and actionable takeaways from it. So shout out to Ben. I think that's just one of the best articles on our site and the type of article you really can't find anywhere else.
Again, that's at the3013.com/betting. Are Vegas totals trustworthy? And I think, like I said before, I'm not a betting guy, but I do like paying attention to this stuff. And what I've learned as SIS has done a lot of projections work, working on the models in the background, forward-looking things. Everybody thinks they know more than they do, but which is part of it. And almost across the board, when in doubt, bet the under. When in doubt, bet the under. Now, that's not to say just blindly bet the under, because the book is taking a vig, and that's they're really going to win at the end of the day. Most people prefer to bet the over, and it seems to be that just for that reason alone, things like Vegas win totals are gonna trend in one direction, even if, like you're saying, you can just go and say, I'm fading all the playoff teams because on average, I'm going to do better than the public. It's kind of similar to like trade down in the NFL draft, because everybody overestimates their ability to hit on draft picks, and everybody underestimates the value of having more lottery picks and shots. And I mean, think about injuries. Like, this is football. Injuries happen all the time. So it makes a lot of sense that there's more uncertainty than we all feel like there is, kind of always. All right, moving forward, let's get into the good stuff. Let's talk about fantasy football and some of your favorite sleepers this year based on the data. We already talked about Hunter Renfrow. Fade Hunter Renfrow. The people understand that. But who are the sleepers that we should be going after, that we should be targeting this year?
So one guy that I just absolutely love is Kadarius Toney. So Kadarius Toney was a player I absolutely hated last season. It was an egregious first-round pick. A four-year player in college with nothing to show from it from a production standpoint. He was not a polished route runner. He was a body catcher of the football. How could you possibly take him in round one just because he's a human joystick with the ball in his hands? That's not enough, because ultimately they're not going to be able to get the ball in his hands at the NFL level because of his deficiencies. And then what did he do as a rookie? He basically showed that, no, actually he can run NFL routes. He can command targets at an unbelievably high rate. His targets per route run, you can check it out on the33rdteam.com/the-edge. Check out the advanced receiving metrics. Kadarius Toney had more targets per route run, a higher rate than someone like Michael Pittman, who was a full-on mega breakout last year. Kadarius Toney is for real. He can run NFL routes. He can, in fact, catch the football. And with the ball in his hands, he is one of the two or three best players when it comes to making defenders miss. So if you're telling me that the guy commands a lot of targets, is dangerous after the catch, and is not going very early in fantasy drafts, well, I am very, very interested. So I think that's just the perfect one where you can use the edge, utilize our advanced data, and go, oh my God, Kadarius Toney was elusive and commands targets. I mean, what more could you really want? Oh yeah. And then on top of that, the depth chart is just barren. Kenny Golladay, a report came out this week from a beat reporter that he quote unquote is running routes with the stiffness of a mannequin. I cannot make that up, but that to me sounds like Kenny Golladay is pretty toasted at this point. Sterling Shepard's still recovering from the Achilles. Wandale Robinson is a 5'7" rookie. Kadarius Toney is set up for a mega season, assuming that he can somehow find a way to stay healthy. We got to wrap this guy in bubble wrap because the upside is truly tremendous with him.
Yep. I'm with you on liking Toney there. He's definitely got some serious upside. Certainly a boomer bust candidate. One thing that I like to see, if you were going to sell me on Daniel Jones, I might have pushed back on you a little bit there, because I don't think, we coached Josh Allen and now we're going to make Daniel Jones good is an argument that moves me. But what I will say is Brian Daboll's coached a lot of bad quarterbacks too. Like, look at the past. It's not just that one. You don't need to have an efficient quarterback in order to be a good fantasy receiver. What I do think I love is that the Bills had a great way of getting their receivers lined up in the slot in situations where they could get them the ball easily, let Stephon Diggs run after the catch, that sort of thing. And I think they're going to be moving Kadarius Toney around. You can expect him to get carries out of jet sweeps and that sort of thing. He's going to be that gadget player, and they're going to manufacture those opportunities for him. Even if Daniel Jones, you know, whether he performs well or poorly, I don't even think that's part of the bet. I think we're betting a little bit on how Toney fits into the system.
Yeah. I think one thing I'll add to that about this Daboll thing, do I think all else equal, it is good that we got rid of the old coaching regime of the Giants? Yes. Do I think that bringing in some Bills personnel will make them better? Yes. However, to your point, if someone like Daboll was known that you bring this guy in and you suddenly turn your quarterback into an MVP candidate, he would be commanding $50, $60 million a year. This would be the most sought after free agent. It would not be the crazy Russell Wilson trade that would take over the summer. No, no, no. It would be Daboll going to the Giants. Will it help? Yes. Is this just some magical panacea where suddenly Josh Allen is now on the Giants? Absolutely not. But also, fortunately, Kadarius Toney, most of his route tree is fairly close to the line of scrimmage. We don't actually need all that much from Daniel Jones for him to be successful.
Right. Yeah. Spot on there. All right. Who else do we like in terms of sleepers that might break out this year?
So I'm going to go rapid fire. I've got three more for you. So one of them is Russell Gage. Russell Gage was not a college wide receiver. He came kind of late to the game. And all he has done in the NFL is take massive steps forward every single year in the league. Last year, in fact, he out-targeted the rookie phenom Kyle Pitts per game. Kind of crazy to think about. Kyle Pitts has this historic rookie season. He's like 6'6", 250. He runs in the 4.4s. But no, Russell Gage was the preferred target last season. His target share was over 20%. That's pretty incredible right there, just to think about for starters. And then Tom Brady, who I consider the best talent evaluator in the entire NFL right now. Scouts, coaches, it doesn't matter. That's honestly why I've always liked Leonard Fournette, is people are like, oh, Leonard Fournette stinks. Look at the advanced metrics. And I'm like, well, look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady hasn't had a bell cow since Corey Dillon. He must think Leonard Fournette is good at football if he wants him on the field for 80% of the snaps. And Tom Brady also wanted Russell Gage to get the 3-year, I think it was $30 million contract. He handpicked him. He really wanted Russell Gage. So I love that fit in an incredibly pass happy offense when there's major health questions with Julio. There's still major health questions with Chris Godwin and when he'll return from the late season ACL tear. Love Russell Gage where he's going. I also like Justin Fields, and we can actually use the edge and the SIS advanced data to see one reason why we should love Justin Fields. Justin Fields is a very unique sleeper because I think people last year remember like the guy was, he was running a lot. He killed it on the ground. But then you look at the SIS data on the edge and realize Justin Fields had coaching malpractice, fewer design runs than players like Mac Jones last year. And you think, wow, this offense was so horribly tailored to him and he was still putting up fantasy points. He was still giving us those coveted rushing yards. Now he's in year two. We often see quarterbacks take a year two leap. And I think if you're picking and your 12-team fantasy league and you end up taking, I don't know, like Stafford as the 11th quarterback off the board, where we kind of know what Stafford is. He's a pocket passer. He threw 40 touchdowns last year, and he still wasn't really moving the needle all that much in fantasy. If you grab someone like Stafford, you might want to pair him with someone like Justin Fields late because of that unique upside that these mobile quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts have. You don't even need to be a good thrower of the football when you have those wheels like Fields. And then the final one, I've already hyped up Leonard Fournette. Let's just keep hyping up this backfield because it's a fantasy goldmine when you have Tom Brady checking the ball down, constantly giving them these valuable running back targets. It's Rashad White. Rashad White was an elite receiving running back this past year in college. He had 10 yards per reception. He had nearly 500 receiving yards. And those 10 yards per reception are indicative of him occasionally being split out wide. This is a legitimate receiving weapon. He had 1,000 rushing yards as well this past year in college. And Leonard Fournette, as much as I love him, has never stayed healthy throughout any NFL season. He has always missed games. And I can assure you that when Leonard Fournette misses games this year, Rashad White is going to essentially take on the Leonard Fournette role. Yet he is probably the younger, more explosive version who might even have better pass catching chops. So I think he's just the perfect bench stash in fantasy this year.
So you just can't get enough Buccaneers. I definitely agree with you on Tony and Fields. Strong potential to make the jump, and especially from a fantasy perspective, those guys are great bets for all the reasons that you mentioned. Let's talk about some other second-year players. Where do you want to go as far as when I say which second-year players are you looking for something big one way or the other?
I love Jalen Waddle this year. A lot of people are like, oh, you can't draft Jalen Waddle. Tua Tagovailoa is probably not a very good quarterback, and they just signed Tyreek Hill to this massive contract. But let's just think about Jalen Waddle in a vacuum. This is exactly the type of player we should be all in on. Jalen Waddle was very good in college and then was taken very, very early in the NFL draft, despite shattering his ankle his final year in college. So Jaylen Waddle was not fully healthy because it had not been a full year since he shattered his ankle. He was not his fully explosive self last season. That makes sense. He wasn't fully recovered from the ankle injury. So a non-fully healthy Jaylen Waddle set the NFL receptions record for a rookie last season. I think there's just a strong chance that Jaylen Waddle is better than Tyreek Hill. I don't quite understand why we have suddenly determined that Tyreek Hill is the clear-cut wide receiver one and should go two rounds earlier in fantasy drafts than Jaylen Waddle. I think it's honestly 50-50. Tyreek Hill has more of the resume. Jaylen Waddle, much more the early bloomer at the NFL level. And I think in the fourth round of fantasy drafts, he is just an incredible pick. And in real football, I think he's one of these dark horse candidates to kind of break out for 1,200, 1,300 receiving yards this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, I would say not even much of a dark horse to me. I agree with you. I don't know if I go quite as far as saying that it's 50-50 him, Tyreek Hill. Maybe at the end of the season, we look back. I could see what you mean there. In terms of, you know, Tyreek Hill's been one of the most dangerous receivers in the NFL. And I think the vision for Waddle is for him to be that dangerous for the Dolphins. Both of these guys are elite speed players, but they're also elite quickness players. And people need to understand that when we're just, you know, when we're complaining about Jalen Reagor and the players like that, we're not talking about the elite quickness that we're talking about when we talk about the Tyreek Hill and when we talk about the Waddle. And it shouldn't be forgotten just how horrible the Dolphins' offense was last year. You're talking about a historically bad offensive line. The ball's having to come out so quickly, it's hard to even get a real evaluation of Tua. And what ended up happening in terms of their weaponry was they were so limited that Waddle got those 100 receptions. He got whatever it was in terms of the targets and never had an opportunity to go anywhere. He was getting the ball on a bubble screen despite being double teamed. Like, what are we doing here? Of course, he's not going to get very many yards per reception when that's what's going on. So I think, in all likelihood, his target share goes down this year. He probably doesn't get as many targets as he got last year, just looking at the full scope of the offense. But with competent play calling, right, whole new coaching staff in there, and other threats in different parts of the field, you can really see how these two guys will mesh well with each other. It's, are you going to play with two deep safeties and just try to keep everything in front of you with these dudes? Then these guys are going to eat up all kinds of yards after the catch underneath. Are you going to try to press them and get in their faces? Well, then you better have two corners you're really confident in that can go and can stay with these guys from a speed perspective. They're just going to put the defense in so many binds given what they've done. And I don't know. Again, like I have more faith in Tua than I do in Daniel Jones, certainly. But even if we're not sold that Tua is all that, even so, I think the case is really self-evident for Waddle. And when you look at the talent of the player, yeah, total points, they didn't like him that much last year. That's because this offense just wasn't producing very much overall. I'm with you. Big breakout candidate there.
So I'll give you another couple second-year players that I've had my eye on. So one of them is Najee Harris. Najee Harris feels like he's due to take a step back this year. Because, well, at least if we're just thinking strictly fantasy for a second, then we can get to real football. Strictly fantasy. Those valuable running back targets that noodle-armed Ben Roethlisberger was giving him because he's not mobile, he can't throw the ball very far, and he's just constantly checking it down. Someone like Mitch Trubisky or someone like Kenny Pickett, these are both play extenders. Even though we don't necessarily think of them like the Justin Fields, like the Jalen Hurts, where they're unbelievably mobile, these are the true play extenders. Think especially like early career Aaron Rodgers, the guys where even if they're not necessarily putting up major rushing yards, they're moving around. They're extending the plays. This is not the type of quarterback that's going to be inclined to just dump the ball off when they're in trouble. They're going to scramble around a little bit, and they're going to try and make the big play happen. That is very concerning for Najee Harris. Also, Najee Harris is probably not going to get a whole lot of red zone goal line work because, once again, this is probably going to be a bad offense. He didn't have that many touchdowns last year, despite having a ton of carries. I mean, one of my favorite stats is that Najee Harris had over 300 carries and had fewer rushing touchdowns than Deebo Samuel. And that just kind of shows you just how this is a bad offense last year. It's going to be a bad offense this year. He also has the Lisfranc injury that just came to light. So if you're telling me that he led the NFL in total touches last year and still wasn't a top five running back per game, and now is most definitely going to have his workload lightened in some way as he recovers from the foot injury, and he's going to get fewer targets because of the Trubisky-Pickett combo, he is someone that I think is going to take a step back in volume for real football. And then in fantasy points, for fantasy football. So he's a concerning one.
Well said. Nothing against the player, but you just, if you don't have 700 three-step drops by Ben Roethlisberger, people won't realize he was still like amongst the league leaders in pass attempts, and they were all two-yard attempts to Najee Harris. It's going to be hard to get that many touches. Sorry, yeah, keep going. Let's reel them off.
I was going to say, that's actually one of my favorite things to do is if you just sort a passing leaderboard by pass attempts per game, it's like, oh yeah, the Buccaneers. Yeah, the Chargers, the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Steelers. The Steelers, they were either number 5 or number 6 in the NFL last year at pass attempts per game, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, those attempts are going to come down.
400th in efficiency. Yeah.
it's bad. So I'll rattle off 3 rapid fire guys. Rondale Moore, I think, is an interesting one to keep an eye on. Quite high in his targets per route run. This was a guy that they definitely featured anytime he was on the field. He just was not on the field very much as a rookie. All indications are they want him in the Christian Kirk slot role from last season, which ended up being a very lucrative role for fantasy for Christian Kirk. Even if Rondale Moore might be a slightly more limited receiver than Kirk, he is much more explosive. We saw him break some long plays last year. So I think he's an interesting late round guy to keep an eye on. I also really like these 2 later round running backs, Kenny Gainwell and Chris Evans, because they both are really good at catching the football. And we know that that type of stuff scores fantasy points. Kenny Gainwell, he had the 11% target share as a rookie. That is very impressive. That puts him in elite company. I am not sold on Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders is not even sold on Miles Sanders. He's taken some fantasy interviews recently with NBC and even said some pretty concerning comments where he basically, without fully saying it, said that he wouldn't draft himself in fantasy football. This is a very concerning situation. Many rounds later, you should just scoop Kenny Gainwell, who's the far superior pass catcher. And then with Chris Evans. Chris Evans plays on one of the best offenses in football. Joe Mixon just had a season of over 300 touches. That is a massive workload. Running backs rarely in their mid-20s like him are able to consistently hold up to that type of workload. And if anything happens to him, Chris Evans could be an absolute monster. As a late-round drafted rookie last year, he still commanded multiple targets in the Super Bowl. They had a designed wheel route play specifically for Chris Evans that Burrow just happened to overthrow. This is a player they love. They want to get him involved. The running back depth chart after Mixon is just Samaje Perine and Chris Evans. Chris Evans is the perfect final round pick in fantasy.
Beautiful. That's good stuff. All right. We've got to get you out of here, but this has been too much fun. I want to get one more quick question before you go. You mentioned targets per route run. One of the really unique data points that you can find on the edge that you just can't find everywhere else that really can take your fantasy game to the next level. Any other stats out there on the edge? I mean, people should get in and just dive in themselves, but which other ones would you shout out there that they need to check out?
So I love the quarterback accuracy that we have for the short, medium, and deep throws. So that's just one of those game charting stats where SIS is paying professional football watchers to essentially evaluate how accurate these passes actually are. Because as you might imagine, not all catches are created equal. Sometimes a receiver makes a catch because it's right in the breadbasket. Other times he has to contort himself. Sometimes when it's a missed opportunity, it's because the receiver dropped it. Sometimes it's because he was overthrown. All that context is given to you with those quarterback accuracy stats in the air yards tab. And then the other one is quarterback pace. Absolutely love it. Essentially how many seconds it takes per snap. And that's where you can look and go, wow, Aaron Rodgers runs the most slow paced offense in the entire NFL. And if they lost their top 2 receiving options in Davante Adams and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and are probably once again going to run a slow paced offense and have made heavy investments into bolstering the defense, that if we're looking at a slow paced offense with no receiving weapons, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers receivers look like quite nice fantasy football fades this season.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Josh. All right. We're going to get you out of here. People can find the edge at the 3013.com/the-edge. What else should people be on the lookout for from 3013 coming up?
So despite all that we have done, one thing we have not fully done yet is we don't have our podcast set up yet. We have a podcast schedule in the pipeline. They're going to be rolled out very, very shortly. We're going to have fantasy, DFS, and betting podcasts for you from some of the sharpest minds of the industry, as well as myself. So I love feeling like the black sheep of this whole thing when I look at our podcast schedule and I go, I don't know if I am fully qualified to be speaking about some of these things when we have professional bettors, professional DFS players that are going to give you in-depth insights totally for free on their full process every single week. I couldn't be more excited for it.
It's going to be awesome. All right, everybody, stay tuned for everything. 33rd team, look out for it. Josh Larkey, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you.
Thanks, Matt.
As we sign off, I want to thank our producer, Justin Stein, as usual. Want to thank our guest, Josh Larkey, who just brought it today and brought tons of interesting fantasy information and even some career advice for all the football people out there and all the fantasy people that are looking to leverage this sort of stuff. As we mentioned, don't forget to check out the 33rdteam.com/the-edge. It is the most powerful fantasy football tool, but it's also a really powerful football tool if you're trying to look and understand a little bit about how running backs are performing in gap versus zone schemes, how different defensive teams perform in against different types of quarterbacks, running backs, etc. This has got everything that you could imagine on there. So please check that out and let us know. Let us know your feedback. We fully intend on continuing to improve it and make it better and roll out even more. We'll have player and team pages on the 33rd team that feature soon and tons more to come from there. So check out the 33rdteam.com/the-edge. You won't regret it. Check it on your desktop, especially because that's when you really get the full experience. For Justin Stein and Joshua Larkey, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for listening to this latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.